Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing program to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Dr. Jay Strack is with us. He's one of America's great leaders. For years, he did evangelistic events all over the world, and 21 years ago, founded Student Leadership University that's had a profound impact on young people that have moved into levels of leadership. Jay, it's great to have you with us.
Well, man, thank you, Jerry. It's Dr. Johnston. It's good to be with you again.
I like Jerry better.
And to get reconnected with you after we've just been through a lot of things together, been on the front lines a lot, and so I'm thrilled to see you doing well, and the Lord just continuing to use you. That's what fires me up when I see guys that are still running the race as fast as they can.
Well, the last time, one of my vivid memories with you was Amsterdam 86. Billy Graham had, 8,000 of us evangelists.
It was a tiny, intimate, chosen group, 8,000.
In the Rye Center for 10 days, as only Billy could do back in 86. And we went out one day, my wife Christy and you and I, and you rented a Mercedes and a driver, and we went all over Holland together.
I remember that.
Do you remember it?
Of course, of course.
Christy's talked about it so many times.
Well, first of all, who wouldn't enjoy being with Christy, number one? But number two, no, it was a lot of fun. I heard so much about you, and I thought, man, this will be fun. And I have the attention span of a AM radio station on scan. So after about day four or five, whatever it was, I was ready to get out and smoke a wooden shoe or do whatever you do in Holland. You know, so.
You remember all those little box lunches and all those evangelists from Africa.
Yes, I do.
And
I do.
Billy, that was a great time. Jay, you've had a unique career. Kind of capsule your career for us.
Well, I got saved when I was 17. One of the stories that unfortunately is very common, a kid in the 60s, you know, broken homes. So I went through four broken homes by the 7th grade, 6 by the 10th grade. Was in 6 detention centers and about that many foster homes. So I was, I was just a kid that didn't have anywhere to land. I felt like a piece of luggage most of my life. And I was smart enough to know I was probably part of the reason for that, but I didn't know what to do about it. So, and then I began to try to kill the pain with alcohol and drugs, and then that takes over your life. So you go from being a victim of being physically abused, sexually abused, and all those things to being the villain. You're the Jesse James of your own life. You start robbing yourself with careless choices and what you do with your life. So I looked up at 17 and had been busted four times and dropped out of school and just got out of a detention center. But during that detention period, it really dawned on me there was something drastically missing in my life. And I just remember saying, God, if you're real, if you're a big deal, seems like you'd send somebody to let me know. And my first day out, I went surfing because I'd been in incarcerated for about 4 months. So I hitchhiked to the beach and borrowed a surfboard and went surfing. And a kid came out to where I was on the board waiting for a wave and said, Jay, you don't know me, but I know you. I left here an hour ago and the Lord told me to come back here and tell you something. And I'm going, now this, I've heard Jai before. But when he said what he did, it just put a chill through me. He said, the Lord told me to tell you he is real. He does care about you, and he wants you to know him, and he's going to make sure you hear all about him. Now, I had said that at midnight in a detention center, that there's no way anybody heard that. I wasn't even convinced God heard that. I didn't even know he was listening. So that started a chain of events. The Jesus movement was taking place. And my best friend died that next weekend in a tragic accident, he and his girlfriend. And And so I got invited to go to, quote, a memorial service, which turned out to be code for Bible study. But they said, Jay, you'll be the next person in our school to die if you don't, you know. And so I went because that girl was so cute that invited me. Mm-hmm. And there that night I heard the message too good to be true and a message too good to keep to yourself. And the first time I went to a Bible study and I heard the message, it was, I stood and gave my life to him and went home, flushed the drugs and all the jive. And that's been over years ago.
Yeah.
Over 40 years ago. So
we're talking to Dr. Jay Strack, and he is the president of Student Leadership University. You went from that unique conversion moment. Who mentored you to launch you into evangelism?
Well, I tell you, Jerry, the Jesus movement had a lot of things wrong with it. And, you know, fortunately, there's going to be a new movie coming out about the Jesus movement. A lot of, I think, some good insights. But there were many positives about it. The thing that they made a big deal about the Bible, and they wanted to sing about Jesus. So all these kids with guitars and drums were a lot of the praise and choruses, things that the church had not heard of back in the late 60s, early 70s. So I was in Bible study 5-6 nights a week. So that was my Al-Anon. That was my, you know, my Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, my ENA meeting, you know. That was, I just was mentored through Bible study. And if I didn't show up, Jay, where were you?
Yeah.
You know. So, and now I had a big mouth. Some truths are self-evident, so, but I had a big mouth. So I started sharing a lot at our high school. Quite a few folks have said they think See You at the Polls started at our high school.
Really? What high school?
It was Fort Myers High School in Fort Myers, Florida, called Marijuana High by the governor of the state of Florida. They put a sign out front, high school. So now everybody knew, you know. Yeah, sorry, you remember those old
signs at Ridgemont High.
Those old assembly jokes.
Yeah,
high school assembly jokes, right?
We can't lose those.
But so anyway, we started praying, three of us around Flagpole. In about 4 months, it grew to about 300, and they called the sheriff's department because they looked out, and there were white kids and black kids, and there was a lot of tension and everything going on, and that made everybody nervous. And then they saw who some of the kids were that were not your church-going kind. So they were convinced, the school folks, that they're up to no good, and you can't blame them. So they sent one deputy sheriff who was the size of our school by himself. And this guy shows up and he goes, what are you kids doing? And I said, well, man, we're praying for our school. We got girls getting passed around like pack cigarettes, and we got bad race problems in our school, and we got a lot of kids on drugs, and we're just praying and asking God to do a work. And he said, well, you know, a lot of people don't think you ought to be allowed to do that at a school. He said, I'm not one of them. And so he joined hands and prayed with us around the fire. So I found out he was a Nazarene. I'd never heard of a Nazarene, but he was Nazarene. So every time I get pulled over, I pray for a Nazarene. Usually I get some Baptist who's once saved, always saved, and there's not a nickel's worth of difference. But anyway, so always pray for a Nazarene
if you
get pulled over. So that's kind of, I was in an environment where it was very natural to talk about the greatest thing that just happened to you. You know, we'd talk about our favorite group. We'd talk about the girl we dated, or we'd talk about everything. So how good the waves were at a certain point at the beach. So why not talk about him? So it was very natural. And the Jesus movement gave a kid like me a place to belong when I didn't fit in anywhere. And the Lord began just to change my life. And then a couple teachers saw that I was different, my attitude was different, I was trying. And so two of them said, Jay, I know that you've been told there's no way you can graduate because you've already missed too many days for the school year. You know, by November, I'd already missed the equivalent of the year that you're allowed to miss. But they said, if you keep trying, we're going to do everything we can to help you graduate. So I think all the teachers got together and said, we think it's God's will, Jay, that Jay graduates. And I know God moved on their heart. But anyway, so I, a couple teachers that I'll never forget, those teachers, you know. So there was a deputy sheriff along the way. There was a couple teachers, one a coach, one an English teacher, that began to talk to me about, Jay, now you got to get serious about this. It's not just go to Bible study and the big excitement. You got to in the quiet, you know, that kind of. And then I started hustling handball. I went to AAU Nationals in handball about 3 years in a row, and I had hair to my waist, so I would put my hair up against these doctors and lawyers. And I'm bouncing around the city and met a guy that you'll know quite well named Bob Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Harrington, we used to listen to his CD, I'm sorry, not CDs, his albums.
Yeah, LPs.
I will explain that for those of you on the podcast. But anyway.
Buying them all the way.
Exactly. So, but we had listened to a couple of his, you know, albums. And it was funny, but it was truth, and it was, you know, it was pretty good stuff. So I saw on a sign that Bob Harrington was speaking, so I went. And I'm standing in line with about, looked like 1,000 other people to get him to sign a book, his story, you know, Chaplain of Bourbon Street. And he, and of course, there I am. It was like a Blackwood Brothers gospel battle of the bands, kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, hello, not quite my world. And so I waded through all the hairspray and everything and stood in line, and he said, son, what's your name? I said, Jay. He said, well, I've noticed you. And he said, I didn't just notice you because of your hair. He said, you don't know me very well. I said, well, actually, I've heard you several times. So, you know, I just told him the story. He said, well, I'm not the kind of guy that runs around going, God told me to tell you something. Well, I'd already heard somebody say that once, you know.
Yeah.
God told me to tell, you know. And he said, as I watched you in line, the Lord just said to me, he needs to get in church and not just keep going to all the different whatever. Of course, Harrington didn't know, you know, Bob didn't know. But he said, if you don't get in church, you're never going to know God's will for your life. So I called the young lady I'd met at the Bible study and was in love with, and I said, I'm supposed to get a job in a church. She said, well, we're getting married in about 2 months. You better get a job somewhere. But by the way, don't you think you ought to go to a church? Because I'd only been in church 3 times my whole life. So anyway, I was trying desperately to get in college, turned down by 13 colleges because of my record, my police record, and other challenges. So I wasn't off to a flying start. And so my young fiance at the time said, why don't we go to one of these extension classes taught by Stetson University, Old Testament Survey, and, you know, why don't we go and I'll sit in the class with you and I'll help you, but why don't you, let's go through one or two of those and you can earn a college credit. You know, you can show them you could do college work. Well, that turned out to be a brilliant strategy. But the guy, most of all, that led that was a gentleman named Dr. Fred Williams. And every night after class, because he wasn't used to having a kid in sandals and showing up with no shirt and just a pair of cutoffs and hair to everywhere, you know, sit in his class and ask questions about the Bible, take notes, and I was really hungry for the Word. So he'd take me out every night after class, Diane and I, and would, I didn't know it then, but was mentoring us. And
wow.
So he recommended me to go preach at this church on a Sunday. And he said, you got to get a haircut. And it was a little town called Immokalee, Florida, which is on the edge of the Everglades. And mm-hmm. It's Seminole Indian for you can't get there from here. You know what I mean? It was just a rough redneck kind of on the edge swamp, you know. So I go get a haircut, but I got it cut from my waist to my shoulders. I mean, I had sold out to Jesus, right? So I show up, and they never would even, no one said hello. There were 17 people in the church. Nobody said hello. Nobody spoke to us. They kept looking out the window. And finally, I didn't know what time kickoff was of a church. I mean, he said, be there at this time. But nobody spoke to us, so I just sat there. And this guy said, well, Dr. Fred was supposed to send us a young guy who's going to preach. And I go, well, they go, well, so they had to go back and have a meeting.
Yeah.
You know, fortunately, they had a quorum, 17 of them there. And they said, somebody said, it's 10 to 12. What harm can he do? So they said, man, go ahead and share. So I had like 10 minutes. So I told them everything I knew and made up stuff. I mean, you know.
Right.
And then I sat down, and the guy started waving his hands, and 3 people came forward crying and weeping. And everybody was quite excited. And I said to the guy afterwards, how did you do that? He said, what are you talking about? you started singing that song and waving your arms, and people started crying, and they came forward. He said, son, I've been singing that same song in this church for 30 years. We've never had three people come down. They didn't come down because of me. They came down because God used what you said. And I said, well, man, was it that bad? I mean, they're all crying. I'm going, was it that bad? Usually people cry if it doesn't turn out good, you know?
Yeah.
And so I had a lot to learn, obviously. They ended up calling me to be pastor when I was 19.
Wow.
And so I preached there for 2 years, and they gave me enough money to go to college. And I got into a school called Charleston Southern University on academic probation, which means they give you one semester to prove you can cut it. And so that was really one of the great breaks of my life. And so there's just been a lot of people along the way.
And then what happened after that? I mean, did you go to Criswell, or where did you?
No, well, what happened to me was I the only one way to say it, I got through 4 years of college in 2 years and 2 months. And they had tested me. And because I had some obvious, they said, Jay, on some things you score off the charts. People are going, how in the world can this kid be do this well? But they're on the basic things. I was on IQ below plant life. So it was just crazy. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason to it. And they found out, and they tested me, found out I was very dyslexic. But if I hear it, I got it.
Sure.
But I was horrible at reading. I had a hard time reading. And so, they labeled me another self-evident truth. I was very ADDDDDD. They added, I think, 3 D's. So they said, we can help you with being dyslexic, and we can help you with being ADD. And they wanted me to take pills. And I said, well, I'm not taking pills. I haven't taken any pills since I gave my life to Jesus. And so anyway, doctor said, well, take a half of one and see if it helps you focus a little bit. So anyway, I ended up getting through some college in 2 years, 2 months. And the school offered me this, they would pay for me to get a master's and a doctorate. If it was like the Army, I would give them so many years back at our school. And that was Charleston Southern. So I got accepted Hebrew University. And we found out Diane was pregnant with our first little girl. And they said, you don't want to have the baby out of the country. So obviously I had all summer now, so the baby was coming in September. So I decided, because of Roy Fish, I know that's a name,
yes,
you'll know.
Evangelism professor at what, Southwestern?
Southwestern, yeah. Seminary. So I went out to seminary for the summer while waiting. So then I was going to go to Hebrew University. And so I was very excited about that. But when we almost lost Missy 4 or 5 times, and then Missy's had to have some 9 surgeries through the years, and I ended up owing over $150,000. There was no way I was going overseas with all the challenges our daughter was having. And so I stayed in Fort Worth, Dallas. So, and I had preached, Dr. Criswell, somebody had heard me preach and talked Dr. Criswell into having me, which is, Dr. Criswell, that's kind of pretty grown-up stuff.
And First Baptist,
and
Dallas.
Everybody made fun of Mr. Trump going, turn to 2 Timothy. But that's exactly what I did. My passage was 2 Timothy chapter 3.
It's the vernacular Brits,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I go, turn to 2, Dr. Criswell had explained, well, Jay, we say 2 Timothy. And by the way, when you sit on the stage, make your socks always pulled up high. And, all the things you had to go through that I never even knew were an issue. But so while preaching, he had me back like every Sunday night for 7 or 8 weeks. And then I got to meet several of the professors at Criswell College that were all young guys. And now there's some of those that have been some of our greatest theologians, Dr. Danny Aiken, and Dr. Richard Land.
Seminary.
Right, Dr. Yeah. Richard Land. So he's now at Southern Evangelical Seminary in Charlotte. And so, but anyway, those guys and then Paige Patterson's one of the great minds of a generation, I believe.
At Southwestern Seminary.
Yeah, he's now president of Southwestern. But all of them were at Criswell College.
I remember those days.
So I was the first non-member. Dr. Criswell asked, would I be on the board of trustees to make sure they always kept evangelism a priority?
Wow.
And so I got to meet, it just opened up a lot of new worlds for me, obviously. So But that's how I ended up being in Fort Worth. And so I ended up going to Southwestern and then auditing everything I could get from Criswell College.
And then capsule your evangelistic career. You went at how many cities and churches?
Well, gosh, Jerry.
Schools.
Yeah.
Well, we did a very similar track.
No question. Well, I did. In fact, there was a paper used to be here. Is it the Houston
Chronicle?
There's the Chronicle, but then in Dallas they had one that went out a bit.
Morning News?
No, the Morning News is Star Telegram. No, that's Fort Worth. But anyway, there was a Times Herald, Dallas Times Herald. Yeah. I'm sorry. So they did a big feature, and they started going and trying to figure out how many high school assemblies. And after 21 years of doing four or five a day, 5 days a week for what, you know, not in the summer, but, you know, the school year, you know that schedule quite well, I believe. So they say I've spoken 10,000 high school assemblies. Mm-hmm. And in that meeting you talked about with Dr. Billy Graham, I got just a few minutes with Dr. Graham, and he was very interested in what I was doing in the high schools. As you know, he was kind of blown away that a preacher could get in. And of course, I hadn't met you at the time, so I was about the only one that was doing it. Now, some had done it in the 50s, but now, you know. So when he asked, he said, well, Jay, what are you going to do if the plane goes down and you're on the way home? And I'm going, well, wait a minute, you're Billy Graham. I mean, have you had like a word of truth or a word of prophecy? Or, you know, I mean, for Billy Graham to pray, it's a local call for the rest of us, you know what I mean? And he's going, no, Jay, I'm just using that hypothetical. I'm going, are you sure it's all right for me to fly home because the plane goes down? So he said, well, Jay, he said, if the plane does go down, who will do all those schools? And who are you raising up? Who are you training to do it? And from that moment on, I always had four or five young guys that would go with us, travel with us, that just had, you know, they were a little rough around the edges, which I could relate to. And you remember those days.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But they had it, whatever it is. And they love kids. And they would work hard and serve and go speak to teams after an assembly. And, you know, so out of that turned out to be one of the richest experiences of my life to watch those young guys. So they were kind of my 12, if you will. And so seeing what really happened in a lot of those young men was one of the things that gave birth to student leadership, that what would happen if you found folks that really wanted their life to take on significance and really wanted to give their life a quantum leap. And if they had that desire, what could we do to make that come about? But that was one of my first real positive experiences about, because I'd have never gone what everybody needs to learn from me. I'd have never thought of that. But when Dr. Graham broke it down, it's not about you. It's about just training those to take your place, you know.
And indeed, Billy did that. We're talking to Dr. Jay Strack, the president of Student Leadership University. And so those years at Evangelism segued to founding 21 years ago Student Leadership University. Tell us what SLU is. You have an alumni base of 180,000 students.
Yeah, we do a national tour now of 25 cities. So that we have two things that we call our front porch. And we have a very gifted young man named Dr. Brent Crow, just got his PhD. And he was really desirous. I would do some private schools in certain cities, but I didn't want to be back doing a tour. You can relate.
I remember those tours.
When he wanted, he said, I just think we could take Leadership Rocks and make it a national tour rather than just a few things that you do. And I said, well, go for it. You know, so he's taken what was three or four cities, and now it's up to 25 cities. And that's really our main front porch. I mean, because it's for the whole youth group. It's for like a D now, only you can get the speakers that most churches can't bring in, or you can get the music artists that, so it's where we give them an opportunity to have a really cool big event that's affordable for them. And yet at the same time, that gives us some cachet with the youth pastors to talk to them about student leadership and challenge the students about not just knowing the Lord, making him Lord of your life, and making good choices, but have you ever thought about, are you going to be a follower? Are you going to be a leader? And so that's the national tour. So when we talk about 188,000, and then we do the Youth Pastor Summit, and we do 8 of those now.
Okay,
where
so
we get
help
youth
me
pastors
the,
for 2 days.
And the vernacular Front Porch is an event for youth in 25 key cities.
Right. That they'll come with their as many of their youth group as they can get.
Okay.
And then, so out of that, we draw a lot of folks for student leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we do 8 youth pastor summits.
Okay.
That we don't charge for, that we gift to the youth pastors and a couple of his key youth workers.
And what 8 cities do you?
We're in Orlando. That's the mothership.
Right.
So we'll have 2,500 register for the youth pastor summit there, 2 days. First day Hard Rock Live, second day First Baptist, and then we're at Prestonwood in Dallas. We've held 4 of them at Second Houston through the years. We're at Saddleback, we're in Nashville, we're in Toronto, we're in Upstate New York, and we're in Kenya.
And what location in Toronto?
Some civic center.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
And the
it's so, a 2-day event, but you know what we're trying to do is add value to the youth pastor,
right.
The youth worker, and if we add value to them, then maybe they'll trust us to be able to do that with their students. Because SLU was born out of, and you can relate to this, Jerry, when you start speaking in all those schools, you know, well then before you know it, that opens up other things. Colleges invite you to come. I mean, you know. You know better than anybody. And a lot of times then some corporations and businesses open up. So I started doing a lot of stuff with like Johnson & Johnson and NASA, I mean, and Walmart and those kind of things.
And so were you speaking to the leadership of those corporations?
I was speaking to their managers, their general managers.
And what were you speaking on? Was it similar to like when we would go in and do an Amway Diamond event, speaking to the diamonds?
Well, only sometimes that could be a Sunday service,
right.
Maybe, you know, so you can preach a lot of the gospel and try to
motivate.
So was
this pre-evangelism?
Yeah, this was pre-evangelism.
Leadership?
Leadership and vision. And 10 years from now, the next big thing will be what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one time General Motors, you know, just gone through what all they'd gone through, all the automobile industry. So that was what they wanted to talk about. 10 years from now, what's the next big thing, right? And how do you leverage that wave? All surfers do is look for the next wave,
right?
So anyway, in the midst of all that, I'm speaking to a lot of folks that are 40 and 45.
In the corporate setting.
And so I'm doing that with everything else. But I'm going, man, you know, these folks, I'm teaching these adults what really you should learn in Sunday school and in youth camp. You know, how to get along with others and how to do first things first and, you know, put others ahead of yourself, et cetera, et cetera. So I looked up, and then I got invited to go to the Air Force Academy, which I was very excited about. But they'd had an honor code situation there. And it was quite a thing internally for them. And then they'd gone co-ed, and that didn't go real well without some turbulence, for lack of a better word. And so I ended up spending a lot of time with the best and brightest dealing with stuff that was like doing a high school assembly, almost, you know. And that's when it really dawned on me. If these kids that are at our academy, if they're struggling with some of the basic decisions one's gonna have to make. And and being able to lead yourself. I mean, you never lead others if you can't lead yourself. If you can't motivate you, how in the world you don't motivate anybody else? So I'm up there dealing with all this stuff with the faculty and the administration and the cadets, some 8 or 9 times it was. And so, you know, I left there going, if these that are so bright and have been given a lot of advantages, if they're struggling, what's the average kid going through when put in a real high pressure? And then it wasn't long after that, Bill Bright and I did a survey of 40 denominations and found out that 85% to 88% of the kids in each one of those 40 denominations spent a year, Jerry, doing their own forensic research and came back and reported anonymously You know, I said, I don't want anybody to say, well, those charismatics or those press, you know, those Baptists. I mean, I knew we'd never get the truth unless there was a way everybody could be honest about what they found out about their own denomination. So I got a motto from my brother Gary that ran the hospital for so long. Jay, you got to leave ego and logo at the door. And I just fell in love with that. So I said, we're leaving ego and logo at the door. We're going to have a blank sheet of paper. Everybody's going to use the same type of pencil. And I want you to write down, and without naming your denomination, but the average for the 40 denominations, there wasn't 3 percentage points between us. And, you know, I'm one of those conservatives, and we're doing it right. Nobody else is quite doing it.
Right.
And then I find out, you know. So, and Jerry, you know, a lot of kids, you know, they got to hear you. They got to hear me. They had camps. They had concerts. And they were still losing 85 to 88% when they go off to college.
Okay, so I want to make sure we really define this. So of these evangelical denominations that – you and Mr. Bright collated this information. 80 to 85% of those young people raised in churches were leaving the church
when they left home, when they left 18, home. Either marriage, military, or college, right?
And so
if they left home.
And so if it was a business, it would go out of business like a torpedo. And it says something about the catechism of the modern church, that we are only keeping less than 20% of those that are birthed and biologically raised in our churches.
Well, you know, later we started having some that I think were real gifts to the church, people like George Barna and Gallup started doing Christian stuff for the first time. And so there were a lot of seminaries that it became kind of vogue about 6 years after the fact to take real umbrage with that statistic.
Right.
Because we didn't have the paper trail. We hadn't done it in conjunction with a university.
Right.
It was, we brought these denominations together, asked what is your greatest burden? What is your greatest challenge? We talked about things that mattered to Bill Bright and mattered to me, which was reaching youth, reaching college students. And so I had tear stains on the paper. So whenever I had Dr. Wine and Cheese or whoever it was all of a sudden slamming because we didn't have a thick paper trail.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, buddy, if you could see the paper it was written on, almost all of them had tear stains on them. I mean, that was written with broken hearts from the people from their own denomination whose job it was to make sure their denomination was getting the job done. And we were all coming clean before the Lord going, we got a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what SLU was and what it is was
Student Leadership, University
was my, you know, I got, you know, 50 of the best youth pastors I knew from about four denominations and said, if you got a mulligan, if you got a do-over, what would you do? If you could get another, and they had to have been in youth ministry 15 years, Jerry, so they weren't just passing through, you know, I mean, youth pastor for 2 years in seminary or something, but they were called to be a youth pastor. And so after I got 50 of those in a room and said, if you could do one thing over, and the only thing that was unanimous was we would spend more time with those in our youth group that were really serious about the call on their life and really serious about making a difference. And I said, well, man, you got youth camp, you got choir trip, you got mission trips, you know, and they said, Jay, listen, you may be the guy that comes in and speaks to the conference, but it's been a long time since you've been a youth pastor. And in the summer, we have the least amount of time. You know, we got to worry about whether the girls are in their room and the guys are in there. We got to worry about the canoes, and we got the deacons and the elders freaked out. The music's too loud. I mean, you know, do we have enough tater tots? I mean, all those kind of. He said, the summer's the least effective time we have. That's the consensus. So we wish we had a week where we didn't have to do 90 other things. But we had a week we could bring our students that had a real call. So I said, you're talking about those for the ministry? And they answered yes and yes. I mean, but call on their life, whatever profession they were going to go into, but they wanted it to count. So that was a whole new paradigm, Jerry, that these guys were saying. And I was kind of, and again, we might as well be sitting together on this deal. It had to be a big deal or I didn't really want to go. And it wasn't because I thought I was all that, and I know that wasn't why you did it. But we were so far down on the scoreboard. For me to go somewhere with 50, 100, 200 people, I'm going, man, we're drowning here. We gotta get everybody we can now. So it had to be bigger made better. Bigger was more spiritual. Bigger was more anointed in my mind. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing kind of a heart cry from those that love students and 24/7 were on call, were available, were the ones, I'd come in and help if there were suicides, and I know the Lord really used you in that area, and drugs or whatever, there was overdoses, we'd come in and address those things in a city, but the youth guys were the guys that were in the room when the parents had to make the tough decisions. Sure. And et cetera. So it really, after that, those three events, the Air Force Academy, the Bill Bright Project with the 40 denominations, and then I called it a 2 out of 3 Falls, Texas death match for those 50 youth pastors. And I said, we're going to lock the door and we're not leaving until we come up with a solution. And I laid out the evidence that had come from those denominations. And when they said, I wish we had a week where we could invest in our 12, just a week where we could hear their dreams and hear their fears and share with them what we know is going to be some challenges when they go off in college. And they said, so we said, all right, somebody needs to design a week. And we all started whiteboarding, what that would look like. And then finally they said, well, Jay, you do big citywide events and you got a staff. Why don't you put the first one together? So I said, all right, I'll do the first one. But guys, this is not anything I'm going to be able to spend a lot of time on. So we did 2. The first year we had 50. And when that, we asked everybody to bring one student, their one student, and let's see what happened. And they were going in their senior year to get them ready for when they graduated. So the first 2 years we did just seniors. And then those youth pastors started going, these kids really are different. We wish we had them a couple of years before they went off and left us, to be an influence in the student ministry. So then we started doing juniors and seniors. And that now we start when they're going in 9th grade. And so it's an opportunity to have a week experience where we teach what we call the rules and tools of leadership.
Rules and tools of leadership.
It's a concept West Point has done a very effective job on. They identify the 8 or 9 leadership skills that they think are incumbent upon those cadets to know, right, under fire. So we started with that phrase, the rules and tools of leadership. And then so now it's kind of morphed into our desires to teach students how to think. Now, not what to think, Jerry, but how to think. Our generation, everybody told us what we thought. This is what you think about alcohol. This is what you think about sex. This is what you think about people that are a different color. And, we were told this is the way it is.
Right.
But there's nobody ever taught us how to think.
Right.
So when we get into the gray areas of life, we don't have a grid of decision making. We don't have a biblical ethic on how to answer those questions. Because in this day and age, with all the technological advances and et cetera, there's not verses that says, thou shalt not do this or thou shalt not do that. Now there's principles, right? So how to think, second of all, how to dream. Never tell a student what to dream, because that's their dream. But if you could do anything and you knew you wouldn't fail, if you could do anything and nobody would make fun of you or laugh at you or say you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough, you're not talented enough, you never finish anything you start, you've never read one book. I mean, all the things that parents do without realizing it, and sometimes those of us in the church does to young people when they start showing a desire, we'll squash that dream immediately. Well, you don't have what it takes. You're from the wrong side of town. We could never afford that, whatever. So we try to give them an environment to learn how to think, how to dream, and then how to lead. And so then we had to go through a big debate with the youth worker world, because people are saying, we don't want a bunch of leaders running around. We want followers. We want disciples. Well, that sounds biblical. I mean, how do you argue against discipleship, right? But, you know, my response was, what good does it do for us to have the same 80 kids come to everything we do as a youth group, but they don't seem to make much difference on their team or in the locker room or in the band or on the cheerleading squad or the debate, whatever it is. So if we have disciples that meet our criteria, but they don't have any influence, and we started teaching the, you know, the adage that the one word definition of leadership is influence. You know, so we want, I don't want a bunch of disciples that don't have any fruit, but nobody does. So, I mean, it wasn't, you know, original with me, but
sure.
We had to go through that argument and be able to take the criticism and verbally challenge them that being a leader means that, you know, you're a servant leader. Jesus is the greatest example of the leader in the history of the world. Well, he was down on his knees washing feet. He jumped in the ditch. You know, he touched the leopard, he forgave. I mean, so if Jesus is willing to serve, and he was the Son of God, the creator of the universe, the Lord of glory, then how do we get off not being willing to serve? So you earn the right to lead by being a servant.
Now, and you're using different geographies. You've just flown in from Paris and the UK. How does that work, 101, 201, 301?
Well, we're very creative with our names, you know, 101, 201, 301. But what we try to do is build on about seven things every year, okay? Number one, a strong biblical worldview. Obviously, every parent, every youth pastor, every educator knows we need to, you have a worldview, and it's going to shape how you look at your life. So we want every year to build on biblical worldview 101, biblical worldview 201, 301, time management 101, people skills 101. What are the components of leadership? And every year be spending a very focused emphasis on this is what it means to be a leader. A leader's willing to do what others aren't willing to do. Leaders are willing to do the hard thing. Leaders are willing to fail. They're willing to serve. They don't care who gets the credit. One of my favorite examples, Jerry, that I get a lot of positive response to is I go, man, leadership's not a title, it's not a position. I said, I have meetings every day where I'm the guy. When I walk in, the meeting starts. You know exactly what I'm talking about. People are waiting, you get there, now we start, all right? But I'll leave those meetings, and I'll have several in a day, but there'll be other meetings where I'm not the guy. I'm one of the guys. In fact, there's women in there, men in there. I mean, we're all there together, and we're peers. And I said I tell the students candidly, for me, I think I enjoy that role more than any other role. When I'm in a room with a bunch of my peers, because sometimes my job is to block for them, for somebody else. Sometimes my job's to tackle for them. I mean, but the greatest privilege in the world is when your peers go, you know, Jerry, we need this to get done, and we think you're the guy. And I talk about Dr. King. He was the youngest in the room. He had experienced the least amount of persecution, if you will, or prejudice. He had suffered the least. He'd been there the newest one in town. But all those wise old men that have got scars in their bodies, unfortunately, with the civil rights movement in many places, they all said in Montgomery, Martin, you're the guy. And I said, there's nothing like when your peers go, sure, we need you to lead on this one. But I said, I enjoy those as much as anything, because I'm with other leaders and they make me better and hopefully I add some value to them. And they know I'm pulling for them, right? Mm-hmm. And then I said, and then I got some meetings where I'm going, do I need to go pick him up from the airport? Or we need more books, or we need some more chairs. Come on, you and I, let's go get a chair. So leaders don't really care what their title is, what the job description. If you ever have a job and you ask what, now if they want to tell you what the job description is, your job is to do whatever you can do, whatever you're asked to do, whatever you can do to make that situation better. That's your job.
So when you pick the students and they start at 101, right. Do they continue with you right through 401?
Yes, sir. Well, many of them do. It depends, Jerry, on the age.
Right.
I mean, for example, you know, if we get them in the ninth grade, right, and they're 14, well, they can go through all of our programs and they're just now getting ready to go to college.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that's ideal because right. We've had them at all. But we'll have every year 300 or 400 or 500 juniors and seniors.
Right.
Well, about the time they finish 201, they're in their second year of college.
Right.
You know, and that's when life starts really getting a little hairier. You know, you got to.
And so geographically, does it start in Orlando at Disney and at Universal?
SeaWorld, right, yeah. But what we do is we call it edutainment. You know, we work hard, we play hard. But my favorite thing, because I'm a little ADD, I teach how to get along with the difficult people inside the shark tank. Mm-hmm. When there's some 70 sharks swimming around, it's a pretty good environment.
Yeah.
Or how do you get in the water with a 5-ton killer whale? And back when SeaWorld was able to do whale shows,
it
was pretty fascinating because you have to earn the whale's trust. And the whale's got to trust you, and then the diver, trainer, has to trust the whale
right. To
put him or herself in harm's way, right? So we would use that on how do you build meaningful, positive relationships? How do you earn trust? You got to earn the trust of your parents. Got to earn the trust of your teachers. You got to earn the trust for me. If you want me to take you to the Middle East, I got to know you're going to be where I tell you to be, and you're going to be when I tell you to be. You're going to be there. I can't have to worry about that if I'm taking you to those places. You know, the hotel where we stay in London, one year there were over 100 different passports, different countries' passports of all the people staying at that hotel. So you're not done a break curfew. You're not done a just come down to the lobby because you can't sleep. You're done a mind what we tell you and here's why. You know what I mean? So we're real big on you got to earn trust. You got to earn the right to do
those things.
So
you're moving the students, though, from this.
We do 101s in three cities, Orlando, San Antonio, San Diego.
And then 201s in what city?
That's Washington, D.C.
And you're also helping them understand the government, et cetera.
We do a White House briefing. We do a Pentagon briefing. Our goal is for them to hear from several generals and admirals, Jeff Strucker from Black Hawk Down, a Vietnam vet, you know. There's a congressman who's a double amputee, a Vietnam vet, now he's serving in Congress. So they'll have a Pentagon briefing, White House briefing, congressional briefing. We'll hear from
which, again, most young people in the average public school, they don't even know how the government works.
Big time. Or anything about our Christian heritage.
If we
you know, so our opening night is like a TED conference.
Right.
We have to limit it to 15 to 18 minutes. And so I start with George Washington. And then Brent stands up and does John Adams, leading from the second chair. And then I do Benjamin Franklin, then he does Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Then he does Lincoln, and then I close with Martin Luther King that night. So we've got a color guard from the military base there, and you know we've sung 3 or 4 of the great patriotic things. We welcome them. This is your capital. You better feel comfortable here. President's House is called the People's House, the White House. You know, so. While you're here, let's learn how this works. So we do all those, we do those kind of briefings, and then we go to the, you know, Civil Rights Museum and the Smithsonian's and the Holocaust Museum. Mm-hmm. And then under worldview, we'll have, could the Holocaust happen again?
Mm-hmm.
And you deal with what's happened with all the abortions, although I'm one of those that think you ought to kind of save the word Holocaust for those 6 million that died, you know? Rather than use that term generally for any, you know, like abortion or other things. So I'm one of those that I guess 100 trips to Israel now, and I realize that, you know, what that's all about. But but they hear worldview at 201 level, leadership 201, people skills 201, but they're also meeting, it's based on the places you go, the people you meet, the books you read, and what you memorize. That's our mantra. So we're intentionally want them to take them places, D.C., London, Paris, Normandy, Oxford, Israel, Jordan, Beijing, Shanghai, or Kenya.
So if I'm a student and I am going with you to London, or I'm going with to Paris or Normandy.
Right.
What level am I at?
That's
am I
301.
At okay.
Yeah. So 201 is DC.
Okay.
And they have to kind of go through the process because it's a maturity
sure.
thing as well.
Sure.
And it's again learning and trust and them buying into if you'll do what you're supposed to do, there's plenty of time to do the cool stuff. If we'll do the hard things,
sure.
there's plenty of time.
And,
you know.
And build a foundation. Yeah. And when I go with you to Yad Vashem in Jerusalem,
yes.
what level am I at?
That's 401.
And I'm in Amman with you.
401. That's the
401.
Same trip. Israel and Jordan.
And you're explaining to me the political as well as the historical
yes,
ramifications
exactly.
of Israel.
No
okay.
question. And obviously that everywhere you go, and they put a shovel in the ground, confirms God's word.
Sure.
And this is, there really was a Caiaphas, there really was a Pilate, there really was King David, there really was a Jesus. These things are, here's all the archaeological proof. So it's a way to.
Then let me ask you some questions.
Anything.
Have you put a book or books together on the curriculum that you have done for two decades?
Well, we have, yeah, we do. We provide a syllabus every year with a lot of material in it, in addition to opportunities for them to take notes during various presentations. So, yeah, we've cataloged the content.
And then secondly, have you filmed these different stages and contacts with students?
No.
And is that an aspiration for the future?
No, no question. But what I ran into, Jerry, was there's a lot of stuff out there right now of a bunch of old white guys, and I is one, so I can say that, right? But a bunch of talking heads in a camera, very linear,
yes.
page turner, sequential, and death on a cracker. I mean, you know,
right.
halfway through it, you're snorting sweet and low and smoking mm-hmm. the hymnal, you know. So we made up our mind that we were going to put all of our emphasis on what would the online school of the future look like. And I read Warren Bennis's book, Organizing Genius, where he talked about the 8 or 9 leading teams in the history in the last 100 years, that the ones who developed the bomb, which allowed us to win the war, Skunk Works, or the Disney original Imagineers, or Gemini Apollo put the man on the moon, those that have wiped out several diseases. I mean, so I read all that, and what amazing things happen, Jerry, when we quit competing and we start collaborating, you know? And we're folks, because like in the room with Einstein, there were 20 other people that resented Einstein getting all the publicity because their credentials were, you know, just as weighty. But they had to figure out how to work together on that for a greater good. So what I did after reading that book is I said, you know, there's going to be a moment where we turn around the bend. And if I jump in now or last year or 2 years ago, it's a lot of white noise. We'll just be, you know, a group, and we have something we can make available to our students. But if we want to be a game changer, why don't we try to go to where the puck is going to be? Why don't we try to go up around the bend, as Creedence Clearwater, the great theologians, remember
yes.
them?
I got high, I remember.
But, and then, but one other thing, Napoleon said the way to win the war is to get there first with the most horses. And I've really tried a lot of times in my life to kind of be the first to do a couple things, you know. Now, we always find out there's nothing new, and there's somebody that has a different name, and sometimes they're doing it better than you were doing it. But that always has been part of my DNA. I mean, what could I do that maybe the Lord's called me to do that's not what everybody's doing? You know, when everybody was going to Africa,
right.
You know, I started going to Eastern Europe before
right.
Glasnost and Perestroika. Now, that doesn't make that right. I'm just saying that
sure.
was my own peculiarity. But what I looked up was I wanted to be where everybody was going to end up and be the first one there rather than just one more with thousands and thousands of hours of online material. So to do that, I put together a dream team. From Apple, Ed, from Newton, the guy that Josiah Farrar, who invented the intuitive adaptive software and was the first to developed the Intuitive Adaptive Platform. Newton with a K. I mean, it's just, he's one of the most inspiring guys on the planet. But so we went to Apple Ed, we went to Newton, we went to Full Sail, we went to Electronic Arts. I got Disney Imagineers. I got NASA Engineers. Our lead partner on a lot of things is the University of Central Florida's Simulation and Training Division.
They're a standout.
Yeah, Dr. David Metcalf. So we put together, obviously educators and those that are known as being thought leaders. So, but we put together a dream team and said, forget budget, forget what will the online school of the future look like? And so we've come up with a concept called Vergence, and we believe we've done a lot of the research, and we're got some folks that are interested. So that's kind of where we are on all that. And SLU will be one of the schools, one of the offerings made available on that platform. And we may call it SLU Lead or something different than the university, and the university be the actual experience they go through. We're still.
Well, Jay, first off, I want to say that what you've done is absolutely remarkable. It's totally, and we both know, totally needed. My wife and I, for 2.5 years, have been documenting on film what I would just summarize as the glaring ineffectivity of the North American church. Hmm. And as we know, the real growth of the church is not in North America.
Right, that's for sure.
And as I sat here and listened to you, I think of the possibilities of even what you're doing in Asia, and in 2050, there'll be 1 billion Christians in Africa. I mean, we know the global shift of Christianity is occurring. And but it's just amazing what you've done, and to have you today at Houston Baptist University and to talk about Vergence. And Houston Baptist University uniquely is a university that's in a megacity. And as we know, and as Dr. Sloan has said, it's one thing to have a Christian university in a small town or medium-sized town. It's another thing when you enter a megacity.
No question.
Both of us having spoken in Houston for many years, a few decades, and these different churches know that the DNA of this particular city is very unique, and that many of the leaders of this city, some of the most powerful, some of the most financially resourceful, uniquely reside in Houston, Texas.
No question.
Is the philanthropy capital of the United States of America.
Right.
And so we look forward to further dialogue with you.
Whether it's medicine or the arts or NASA or it just goes on and on.
And
business.
It doesn't stop. I mean, the first time I came to Houston, I preached at First Baptist Church, League City, Texas. I'll never forget it. A deacon almost killed me on the way there on the highway, and I thought it was busy back then.
Yep,
and,
I hear you.
It hasn't even stopped in spite of it. So let's give the website. For SLU?
Yes. It's studentleadership.net.
Studentleadership.net, Dr. Jay Strack. And we look forward to future dialogue with you,
you
as we move forward in
well,
the days
ahead. Well,
it's
an honor to see you and be with you. And I need to have equal time because there's about 100 questions I'd like to ask you.
We look forward to it, Jay. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, man. And it's pretty exciting what you're doing out here at Houston Baptist. And having Dr. Sloan's not a bad way to have a remarkable leadership.
A great entrepreneurial leader who is not afraid to ask why or to change something.
Ed Young, has a little church here in town, is the first one. In fact, about 5 different times he's talked to me about this school. And he said, I'm telling you, just watch what happens, So. I feel like I'd already been hearing a lot, but now I'm really intrigued. So thank you.
Thank you.
At HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.